This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Bob Edwards is away. I'm Renee Montaigne. The number of Americans infected with West Nile fever this year is approaching 300, and more than a dozen of those have died. Most of the lower 48 states have reported outbreaks. Montana and New Mexico are the latest. Two more fatalities from the West Nile virus were reported in Georgia yesterday, but that has yet to be confirmed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC calls the spread of West Nile fever an emerging epidemic. The mosquito-borne virus that triggers the fever was first reported in the New York area in 1999 and has been spreading rapidly across the country since then. Humans aren't the only victims of West Nile. Horses have been killed and traces of the virus have been found in the carcasses of more than 100 different species of birds. Wildlife experts say some of the country's best-known species may be at risk. NPR's John Nielsen reports.
The West Nile virus has a biblical way of announcing its arrival in a neighborhood. All of a sudden, the crows drop dead. Washington, D.C. resident Gail Levine says she first noticed this phenomenon a few months ago when her dog walked in the back door of her house with the smell of death all over it. She went out back to take a look.
And I was really, I don't know what the word would be, but it was pretty awful finding this little teeny tiny decimated smelly dead crow in my backyard.
Crows are hardly ever seen in Washington these days. Experts say it's certain that they've almost all been killed. Nick Komar is a bird expert with the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The virus invades almost every organ of the crow's body, even the skin, for example. And the tissue damage that occurs from the infection is probably what leads to the bird's death.
Offhand, Komar can only think of a few diseases that kill off lots of animals before they start infecting humans. One of them is a nasty foreign disease called Rift Valley Fever. Another is rabies. Komar says he's sometimes asked who's doing the national study of the crow die-off. His answer is short.
Nobody.
He says the reason is simple. Most of the agencies that study diseases in this country study human diseases and not threats to animals. At the CDC, for instance, diseased crows are studied as potential threats to humans and never for their own sake.
There is a sector of our society that deals with wildlife health issues, but it's generally underfunded and not very many people are involved.
The West Nile virus has surprised a lot of experts this year, infecting more people than expected and spreading to the south and west more rapidly than anticipated. Experts like Komar say everyone agrees that threats to humans must be dealt with first. Next on the priority list come domestic animals, horses, chickens, and cows. After that, zoo animals. Tracy McNamara, a veterinarian with the Wildlife Conservation Society, says that hasn't left much room or money for hawks, cranes, and eagles.
The fact is, though, free-ranging wildlife are the equivalent of the homeless. Nobody owns them. Nobody wants to pay for it. And that's the bottom line. Until we get some kind of support to be able to offer the same kind of intensive diagnostic investigations for wild animals as we do humans and domestic species, we're always going to have a biological Achilles heel.
No one expects this virus to cause another giant die-off, like the one that has already killed millions of crows, but smaller die-offs are still in the cards. Jays have been hard hit in the south, and there are plenty of other candidates. Nick Komar of the CDC says traces of the West Nile virus have now been found in the carcasses of birds from 120 different species.
That doesn't mean that those birds are carriers of the virus or reservoirs of the virus. We don't know that those birds are able to transmit the virus. Some of them may in fact be dead-end hosts.
Komar says most local health agencies stop testing birds after humans get sick, and some never even start testing birds. It could be that silent die-offs are happening now.
Take, for example, ruby-throated hummingbird. There have been two or three dead ruby-throated hummingbirds reported. But how many dead ruby-throated hummingbirds are actually even found? Very few, I presume. So it could be that huge numbers of ruby-throated hummingbirds are infected and killed, but nobody knows that that's the case. And I'm not suggesting that ruby-throated hummingbirds do have a high mortality rate. I'm just saying that if they did, we wouldn't know it.
A minor die-off might be all it takes to wipe out an endangered species like the California condor or the Florida scrub jay or the whooping crane. That's partly why flocks of whooping cranes and sandhill cranes living at the federal government's Patuxent Wildlife Research Center in Maryland are now inspected on a daily basis for signs of the disease. The sandhill cranes in front of me are strutting and squawking and pointing their beaks way up into the air. Glenn Olson, the center's chief veterinarian, says that's not the way they look when they're sick.
Generally, when the birds are sick, they look like people when they're sick. They don't really want to stand upright. They're sort of slouched over. They're not calling actively. Their eyes are sort of glazed a little bit. They generally look depressed when they're sick. That's the most common sign of the illness.
Olson says he can't afford to miss a diagnosis.
When you only have 400 whooping cranes in the world, you really are concerned if you're going to lose a large percentage of them, because it could set us back to 1941 when there were 15 whooping cranes in the world.
Olson says he doesn't think the virus will trigger a die-off in the whooping crane population, but tests on related sandhill cranes show that even when the virus doesn't kill, it can do lasting damage.
If this compromised situation continues, let's say, into a breeding season, it could mean that they don't breed that year or for multiple years if they're not feeling perfect.
There is a federal agency that's trying to track the damage done to free-ranging animals. It's called the National Wildlife Health Center, and it's based in Madison, Wisconsin. Spokesman Scott Wright says it's true that in the past the lab was underfunded and undervalued. But Wright thinks that might be changing, thanks in part to the rapid spread of the West Nile virus. He says plans are now being laid to track the virus extensively as it moves into crows and other wild birds in the West. And there's another thing. Interest in the wildlife lab has grown sharply since last year's terrorist attacks. Wright says bioterrorism experts come around all the time now in hopes of learning how to react if a new virus were to be deliberately brought into the country. Some of these experts regard the fight against West Nile as a kind of training run, scientifically and bureaucratically.
The interaction between various agencies and governments and folks and health departments and all the sorts of stuff that become a part of the mix, reporting information, accurate reporting, getting samples necessary to the right places for a diagnosis, getting the results out, all those things spill into and in a way are practice for, if you will, practice for the badness that comes later on.
Even after all of this, Wright says he is sometimes asked why anyone should even try to keep a virus out of crows. After all, according to this argument, they're only crows. Wright says he tells these folks to look at the situation like this. By the time the crows are dead, the virus is all around you. John Nielsen, NPR News, Washington.